Okay, we're beginning here on the last line of Lamed Tet Amud Bet. Just to refresh ourselves, we left off yesterday with the Braita that had a structure of Yivama Yivo Aleha Mitzvah. And then the Braita went on to explain Heter, Isur, Heter. There is the structure, which is going to come up again, and that's why it's important to understand in the Braita again, which is that we have a point in time where something is Mutar, then it's Nesar, and then it becomes mutar again. When it becomes mutar again, it's not exactly like it was in the first place. Mitzvah, there is a mitzvah associated with that. The Gemara tried to then interpret what was the cryptic Braita saying. So we had two ways to deal with that. That was Rav Yitzchak Bar Dimi and Rava. Rav Yitzchak Bar Dimi says the Braita is following the Shita of Abba Shaul. And therefore, when we talked about Heter, Heter was this woman before she married anyone. This individual could have married her if he so chooses, or not marry her if he doesn't choose to. It's up to him. He can marry her for any reason he wants, whether that is for companionship, for her beauty, for her money, whatever he so chooses, he can marry her. Then Asura, she becomes Asura when she marries his brother. When she has married his brother, then she becomes Eshet Ach, and he's not allowed to marry anymore. Then his brother passes away without any children. She falls before him to Yibum. So now she is Heter again. But that Heter is not similar to the first Heter. In the first place, he can marry her for any motive. Now the motives are limited, and that is the way Rav Yitzchak Bar Dimi reads the mitzvah is limitzvah. Only the shame mitzvah, the kavanata mitzvah, may one marry for Yibum, but not for any ulterior motives. And that's the way he explained the Braita of Heter, Iser, Heter. Rava comes along and says, no, afilu tamer rabbanan. Even according to the rabbanan, Abba Shaul is l'shita to, where he says that the only time you can perform yibum is he does it l'shem mitzvah, the kavanata mitzvah. If not, it's pogea be'ishadach. The chachamim say, yivama yivolah mikom makom. All he has to do is perform yibum. We don't worry about what his kavanot are, just do the mitzvah of yibum. So the way Rava explained the braita was, in the beginning it was heter. Heter Gomor, he could decide if he wanted to marry this woman or not marry this woman. It was up to him. He had the choice. Yes, no. Then his brother marries the woman. Now he's restricted because she is Eshedach. His brother passes away without any children. Now she falls before him to Yibum. You would think again he has the same choice. Yes to marry her, no to marry her, like he did originally. The Gemara then interjected in the middle of that and said, what do you mean he has a choice? He has to do something here. He has to do Yibum or Chalitza. It's not like he just say, I don't want to marry her. Yeah, so the Gemara says, yeah, oh, do the mitzvah or Chalitza. You would think it was optional. The Braita says, Yivama Yivo Aleha, mitzvah. That we give precedence, we give priority to doing the mitzvah of Yibum over Chalitza. And so whereas before he had an open choice where he could decide whether he wanted to or not wanted to marry her, now really he is pushed in the direction of marrying her because we prefer he does Yibum over Chalitza. So that was the Braita that we looked at, the machloka between Rav Yitzchak Bar Dimi and Rava, is how to explain that Braita. Now the Gemara on this last line says, Ema Reisha, or Ema Seifa, depending on which girsa you have over here. But this is the same Braita, and a similar structure. Now let's take our explanation from the part about Yibum, and apply it to the other part of the Braita, which is, Matzot Teachel B'Makom Kadosh. They must be eaten as matzot in a holy place. This is talking about minachot. Minachot are kodshei kodoshim. In the case of most minachot, the komets of the mincha ends up on the mizbeach. The shayarei mincha, the remainder of the mincha, then is lakohanim. It's for the kohanim to eat. Here it says that when they eat it, it's matzot teachel, they have to eat it as matzah, bimakom kadosh. And they have to eat it in a place that's kadosh, since they're kodesh kodoshim. Therefore, they have to be eaten in the Azara. So that's what the Pasuk says. So it says, Matzot Teachel B'Makom Kadosh. Mitzvah. Similar type of structure that we saw. Yivamo Yavo Aleha. Mitzvah. Now it says, Matzot Teachel B'Makom Kadosh. Mitzvah. Shebechila Hayita Alav Bichlal Heter. In the beginning, it was Heter. Ne'esra. Then it became Asura. Bechazra Buta. And then it became Meheter again. Yachot Achzor Leheter Arishon. You would think it goes back to its original Heter. Tamad Omar, Matzot Teachel B'Makom Kadosh, Mitzvah. The exact same structure as the Yibum part of the Braita, which is, we have Heter, Iser Heter. You would think that the latter heter is the same as the original heter. No, the pasuk says matzot echel b'makom kadosh mitzvah. So let's talk about this. You have flour, you have water, you have these raw materials. Before anybody is makdish them, he could do as he pleases with them. He can bake them into matzot, he can bake them into chametz, he can bake them into a cake, cookies, whatever he wants to do with it, that is his prerogative. Then the individual is makdish them to bring a mincha. So once he's makdish them to bring the mincha, it becomes asura. Nobody's allowed to partake of these items, not the balim, not the kohanim, no one partakes of them until they're brought as a mincha. Once they're brought as a mincha, again, you take off the kometz, it's placed on the mizbeach. This was the exclusion of a mincha of the kohanim. The mincha of the kohanim is kalil al mizbeach, but a mincha tisrael, where you take off the kometz, you place it on the mizbeach, the shayarei mincha now belong to the kohen. Chazra leheter arishon. Now the kohen has a right to eat the shayarei mincha as he pleases. You would have thought when he gets it, he can eat it any way he wants. The pasuk says, no. Matzot te'achel b'makom kadosh mitzvah. So now, how do we explain that? Peace. Bishlam ol Rava damar haimani rabbonon. He, according to Rav, will explain the part of the Braita dealing with Yibum, according to the sheet of Rabbonon. Hacha hachikamar. This is what it means over here. Matzot te'achel b'makom kadosh mitzvah. This is what it means. That, what does it mean? Matzot te'achel b'makom kadosh is a mitzvah. Shibitz chita la, chaita la b'chlal heter. In the beginning, it was totally mutar. Ratzo ochla, ratzo enu ochla. If he so chooses to eat it, doesn't choose to eat it, as he pleases, he can do with it. Then, nesra, chazra butra. So again, it became asur because he was makdishit. Then it became mutar again. Yachol tavzor leterishon. Ratzo ochla, ratzo enu ochla. Now you would think again, once it becomes mutar, he can eat it if he likes, he cannot eat it if he doesn't want to. So where it says, ratzo enu ochla. What do you mean if he doesn't want to eat it? What is that an option? Vaktiv. V'achlu otam asher kupar v'hem, that the kohanim have to eat the korbanot, and through their eating of the korbanot, they provide kapara to the baalim. So what do you mean it's an optional? They need to eat it, otherwise there's no kapara for the baalim. Ma'amei, shekohanim ochlim u'baalim mitkaparim. So we see that pasuk teaches us that when the kohanim partake of the korbanot, and they eat the korbanot, they provide part of the kapara for the baalim. Ela ratzahu ochla, ratzah kohen acher ochla. Now here, he doesn't have to in particular, it's not him in particular that needs to eat it. Maybe another kohen would like to eat it. Tamal omar, matzot te'achel b'makom kadosh, mitzvah. It's a mitzvah on him to eat the mincha. And this is a broader question in Kodoshim. We've dealt with this in numerous locations as to the mitzvah of chilat kodoshim. The mitzvah of chilat kodoshim, it's not clear. It's a machloket amongst the Rishonim and a chakira that's brought up by many of the Achronim, Minchat Chinuch, others talked about it. We've spoken about the Mekorot on this issue before, but the mitzvah of Achilat Kodeshim Ayodei Kohanim, is that a mitzvah on every individual Kohen that they must eat from the Kodeshim? Or is that a mitzvah that devolves upon the Kohanim as a whole? Each Kohen can discharge the obligation, but no single Kohen is obligated in that mitzvah. The kohanim as a class are obligated in the mitzvah, and anyone who partakes can do the mitzvah, but there's no mitzvah on each individual. From here, it sounds more like that there is a mitzvah, there's something driving force to the individual kohen, telling him that he should eat it. Again, you could argue that it's still under the mitzvah of all kohanim, but just saying that it's not optional anymore because there is a mitzvah here. Since there is a mitzvah, he should eat it. He shouldn't walk away from it. But here it makes it sound more like there is a mitzvah on this individual kohen to eat the korban ha-mincha rather than just on the class of kohenim. So here you have Rava's explanation, which is parallel to his explanation by Yibum. We have heter in the beginning. Heter means I can eat it, I cannot eat it. And same with the Yibum. I can marry this woman, I don't have to marry this woman. Then it goes to Isur. It's been made kodesh. And to be brought as a mincha becomes a sur. The brother marries the woman, she becomes asura. Then we have the last stage, which is the kometz. The matir is brought on the mizbeach. Now the mincha becomes heter again. The ach, the brother, passes away without any children. The woman becomes heter again. Yochol, yachzor leheter arishon. You would think it goes back to the original heter. Both cases, the bride says, no, the mitzvah. So in the case of Yibum, that is that we give precedence, priority to doing the mitzvah of Yibum over Chalitza. Yes, it's still optional, but we favor very heavily doing the Yibum side of it because that is the mitzvah. And over here, by the case of Mincha, before it was, if he wants to eat it, he can. If he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to eat it. Now we say, well, is it optional for me to eat it? Not really, because it's a mitzvah for him to eat it. Therefore, we favor him eating it over not eating it and having his other kohen eat it, because it's a mitzvah for him to eat it. So according to Rava, you have the explanation is parallel in both sections of the Braita. But El Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, according to Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, the Amar Abba Shaoli, who said the other part of the Braita with regards to the Yibum, was according to the Shita of Abba Shaul, and he read the word not to be mitzvah, but limitzvah. You must do it for a mitzvah. Hacha, maitre gavneika. What two different paths do you have here? How do you bifurcate the mitzvah of mincha to say you can eat it limitzvah and eat it lo limitzvah? By yibum, you can say that he performs yibum l'shem mitzvah, the kavanat mitzvah, or he does it for ulterior motives. Over here, when he's eating the mincha, how do you bifurcate the din, where in one case he's doing it right, in one case he's doing it wrong? But to say that it's a different type of eating. In one case he eats it with appetite, with gusto. And in the other case he eats it when he's already stuffed full. It's achila gasa. Gemara says, achila gasa, mishma achila. Forget it, achila gasa is not even called achila. You have to come up with a case or a scenario where you have one achila and another achila. One achila is good, the other achila is no good. Over here, achila gasa doesn't even qualify to be considered achila because he's so full that he despises the food. Person who eats on Yom Kippur achila gasa is not in violation of the mitzvah of lo te'une, of the need to afflict oneself on Yom Kippurim, because Rashi over here says that, interesting enough, he says, shav ze inuihu. This is also inui shemazik et atzmo, because he hurts himself. So that's interesting formulation of it. You could have just formulated that it's not achila. I mean, it doesn't take away from the inui. Could have just been neutral. It doesn't do anything vis-a-vis inui, therefore he's still afflicted. Rashi says, not only does it not give him pleasure, it actually hurts him, and it's an active type of inui, which is an interesting way to formulate it. But achila gasa is not going to solve our problem here, because it's just not called achila. Tosafot over here mentions his shita that we see in other places in Shas. Tosafot says there are two types of achila gasa. Because in other places, the Gemara talks about eating korbanot, achila gasa, and sometimes it is classified as an achila. So Tosafot says it depends how you feel. If you can eat more, even though it brings you no pleasure, that achila gasa is still considered to be achila. If you eat it and it causes you to be disgusted and maybe even to throw up the food or be in pain about it, that's an achila gasa that's not even classified as achila. So over here, that's not going to solve our problem. Ella ratza matzah ochla, ratza chametz ochla. Then it says, oh, maybe this is the way to explain it. The shayra mincha, you can eat it either as matzot or you can eat it as chametz. That'll be the option that he has here. Vaktiv, it says, wait a minute, how could you suggest that he could eat it as chametz? Doesn't the pasuk say, lo te'afeh chametz chelkam? That even the portion of the kohanim may not be chametz. V'amrish lakish, v'filu chelkam, lo te'afeh chametz. The way to understand that pasuk is even the chelik of the kohanim may not be baked into chametz. In the Migdash, we learn that in the parashat Vayikra, it says that chol sehor v'chol dvash, lo tatir bimenu l'ashem. You're not allowed to bring any chametz or dvash on the mizbeach. That means that anything that is a form of lechem in the mikdash, that includes the lechem apanim, all the menachot are not made out of chametz. Anything that ends up in the mizbeach, there is no chametz involved with it. Anything that's not on the mizbeach, also there's no chametz. And here the pasuk tells us that even the portion of the kohanim, lo te'afeh chametz chalkam, their portion cannot even be chametz. Chametz only ends up in the Mikdash in two scenarios. Once is with the Korban Todah, the 10 chalot of chametz, and the other time is on Shavuot with the Shtei HaLechem. Otherwise, there is no chametz whatsoever in the Mikdash, and those exceptions are mentioned in the Pasuk in Vayikra, that Vikurim and the Shtei HaLechem are the exception to the rule, where we do have Dvash and chametz in the Mikdash, but otherwise there's no chametz. So what are you talking about chametz for? Ella, ratza matzah ochla, ratza chalut ochla. Maybe here's the option. He can eat it either as matzot Or you can eat it as boiled. Chalut is to put it in scorching, boiling hot water, the raw dough, and have it be baked in that way, similar to a bagel type of baking. Hai chalut echidami. Please explain to me how this is working. E matzahi. If when you do that, it turns out to be matzah, ha matzahi. So then what's the difference? It's matzah and it qualifies. Vilo matzahi, matzot amai rachmana. If it's not a matzah, it's not classified as a matzah, then it says, matzot teachel b'makom kadosh. Then it doesn't qualify, then it doesn't help you for the mincha. So the guy says, lo, lo meim lecha matzahi. It is called matzah. Olahochi tana bei kra, la'akev. And this is why the pasuk repeated it, to tell you that it's li'ikuv. So that telling you that you must have matzot. Not only is it a mitzvah to have matzot, but it repeats it to tell you that it has to be matzot. Not that it's best thing to do is matzot, but it must be matzot. And not chalut. So even though chalut qualifies as matzah, nevertheless, we won't use it for the eating of the menachot. You must use matzah in the purest sense. Matzah, like we know what matzah is, you baked it like a matzah. Rashi over here quotes, when we say matzot amar rachmona, Rashi brings over here, b'sherim mincha chova dichti b'tzavet aron, v'achlu matzot, v'odin l'shar menachot, that's by the miluim. He quotes the pasuk that tells you that they ate it as matzot, and therefore we must eat it as matzot here. Matzot te'achel is the second time, and that's what it's shana lava katuv. The katuv repeated it twice, once by the miluim, and from there we extrapolate to all menachot. Plus our pasuk that we're quoting from Vayikra, which is matzot te'achel b'makom kadosh, that's twice that it tells you matzot. Comes to tell you, mitzvah, la'akev, it must be matzah, it's not simply okay to be matzah. Tosafot and the Tosfot Yishanim here say that Rashi's explanation can't be correct because then you're learning out Dorot Misha'ah, and therefore they give alternatives as to how we have Shana la'akev, or they say that this Shana la'av la'akev is different than in other places because here we only have one pasuk, we're not dealing with two psukim. So where it says, Ela chalut matzahi de kamrina de mayhilchata. Well, if that's the case now that we said chalut, that boiling it in the hot water makes it into matzah, what halachic ramifications does that have? If it doesn't make it matzah enough to use by minachot. Lomar, shadam yotze ba yudoi chovato b'pesach, to tell you that, that type of matzah is considered to be lechem oni, and you can use it at the Seder, you can use it on the night of Pesach. Afal bi dechalte mi karo, even though he boiled it up front, Kevin Dahadar Afya Bitanur, since afterwards he put it into the oven and baked it, Lechem Oni Karinen Bey. But Dam Yotze Ba Yedei Chovato Pesach, therefore it's called Lechem Oni still, and you can use it for Pesach. Now obviously there's a lot of nuances about this. Tosfot himself speaks about it. Here you can put it Obi Ufis Lechem Ikre, or if you put it into a frying pan, if he takes it after he's boiled it and puts it into the oven and bakes it or fries it, then he can make it into lechem. And then the other thing he mentions is lechem oni prat l'chalut. We have a explicit din in Perkol Sha'ah in Pesachim that says that you're not allowed to use chalut. So then he says, O domain reinu tam dhatum b'chalut gadol dum yada shisha lo chashiv elechem oni yifishu gadol. That's talking about a big chalut type of thing. V'lo mishum d'chalut ina mehatam b'blilato kasha v'acha b'blilato rakah. It depends on the nature of the dough once you're baking it. Is it already hardened by the process? And therefore the baking is not really making a difference, or is it still soft, so therefore the baking is coming it in? He speaks about this. Obviously, we don't think you can have bagels on Pesach, right, which are boiled and then baked. So obviously, there's a fine line between when chalut works and when chalut doesn't work. The main idea is that the boiling hot water should cause a cessation of the rising of the dough, which is that they, once you put in this boiling hot water, that it stops the dough from rising, so you have to do it quickly, so it never rises, and then you bake it, and so that'll stop the process. The details are in the Gemara of Pesachim, but that's the way that Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi is going to explain this bright in the end. In the end, it doesn't turn out to be exactly parallel to his case before, because his case before is the mitzvah. The mitzvah means that kavanata mitzvah. Over here, the word mitzvah is going to mean something different, which means it's la'akev. You must do it for the mitzvah. Just like by yibum, you must do it for the mitzvah. But not over here, there's really not an alternative option. But in the end, that's what Abishol says. The ulterior motives make it that it's really not an option. So both of these cases, the option for the mitzvah is the only option. So yibum, the mitzvah, is the only choice between Yibam doing it right, the mitzvah, and not doing it for the ulterior motives over here, doing it as a matzah is your only option in order to eat the mincha. The other options of making it are not real options because they aren't matzah. Again, it's not exactly parallel, but the Gemara sees them as parallel enough that we can explain the whole braita this way. All right, next Mishnah. Hacholetz livimto, arehu keachad min achim lenachala. Person who performs chalitza to his yivama, then he is like one of the other brothers as far as nachala. If there's a father, nichasim shalav, the father inherits. In a case where you have an individual passes away, obviously here the passed away without children because that's why his wife is up for yibum or chalitza, then the first inheritor of any individual is the parent. The father is the first line of inheritance. And then after that goes to the brothers through the father. So if the father is still alive when this brother deceased, then the Yerusha will go to the father, and then later on to all the other brothers. It won't go to this brother who performed chalitza. By performing chalitza, he gets no more rights in the property of the deceased than any of the other brothers. And obviously, again, if the father's alive, he is the one who goes first. Hakoneis yivimto zacha b'nechasim shel achiv. The one who performs yibum then does get the property of the deceased brother. Property that he has now comes along with the wife. The Yerusha comes over to this brother who performs yibum. It says that if there's a father there, then even if the brother performs Yibum, the Yerusha goes to the father, not to the brother. Mar says, Pshita, what's the question here? When he performs Chalitza, why would you think that he inherits the brother when he performs Chalitza? I would have thought that Chalitza stands in place of Yibum. So he should take all the property. Kamash Malon, that it's not. Where it says, Yehochi, Harehu Keachad Min Achim, how would you explain it that way? Because then the next line in the Mishnah is that he is like one of the brothers. It should have read like this. Eino Ela Keachad Min Achim Mibayle. It should be like he is not any better than the other brothers. Over here, it makes it sound like he should have gotten something. And then we decide, no, he's not entitled to it. So we would have thought he got it. And then we take it away from him. So if you were to express that, you would say, Hacholetz libyamto. How would you express it? Someone performs chalitza with his yivama. So then you say, I would have thought he gets the Yerusha. No, don't say that. Eino ela keachad me'achim. He's only like one of the brothers. You're downgrading him. But that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, Hacholetz libyamto arihu keachad me'achim. That's it. He's like one of the achim. Doesn't make it sound like he had a better claim, and now we're dropping his claim down. It sounds like he's lucky to be one of the brothers now. So that's what Gemara says now. El sakadat famina hov afsadom yibum lekansei. Let us say, because he ruined the possibility of yibum. Sounds like here there's a possibility that some of the other brothers would have performed yibum over here. That kamash malon, that just because he performed chalitza does not mean that he loses out on the Yerusha. Now, this goes back to, this is really a great example of the chakira that we've spoken about all along between Yibum and Chalitza. The Gemara's Havamino is that Yibum and Chalitza are equal options over here. And therefore, if he performs Chalitza instead of Yibum, he should inherit the brother. Just like if he performed Yibum, he would inherit the brother. So too with Chalitza, he would inherit the brother because Yibum and Chalitza are two sides of the same coin. Whichever one he does, he's done the mitzvah, let him inherit his brother. The Gemara's conclusion is no. That Yibum is the primary mitzvah over here, but Chalitza is just a way to release the woman. Therefore, when he goes and performs Chalitza, and he takes away the possibility of Yibum from the other brothers, maybe he should actually lose out. Because he jumped the gun and did Chalitza over here, that's what it sounds like happened over here, he jumped the gun and did Chalitza and prevented others from doing Yibum. Yibum's the mitzvah. Chalitza is just the release. The fact that he did it, maybe he should be penalized for that. Kamash Lan, that we don't penalize him for it. But you can see that tension in the Gemara about how it views Chalitza. Meaning that in both cases we conclude it's not the case. So in the end we don't know what the real side is, but you see the Gemara toying with both options. One option where Chalitza is equal to Yibum, and one option where Chalitza is not. It's the lesser of the choices here, and it might even be negative if you do Chalitza instead of Yibum. Again, the Gemara says Kamashman in the end, that is Chalitza is neutral. So we don't know what that means when it's neutral, but you see the Gemara at least toying with both Havaminot, about how Chalitza relates to Yibum. Right, so now the Gemara says, Im Yesham Av, Damar Ma'ar, because we have a memra from Baba Batra when it talks about Yerusha, Av Kodem L'chol Yotzei Yerecho. A father always goes before any of his descendants. Over here, who are competing for the Yerusha, there are no children to the deceased, because that's why the woman is up for Yibum. So it's either his father or his brothers. His brothers are Yotzei Yerecho of the father. They are the descendants of the father. That means that the father goes first, because he trumps anybody that is a descendant of his. Hakones et yimtinto, someone who marries his yivama, my taima. Why is it that he is entitled to the Yerusha? Because it says, Yakum Hashem Achiv Amar Rachmana, very calm. Because it says that he will take on his brother's position, basically fill his brother's shoes, very calm, and he did so. So since he has now taken the yivama in and performed the Yakum, he gets basically Shem Achiv. He gets his brother's name. His brother's name, the only thing that's there is his wife and the Yerusha. So he's going to get the possessions as well. We already learned earlier in the Masechta, the drusha of how this relates to Nachala, that the fact that he also gets Nachala, and that we're not going to read it in the simplest way, the Pasuk. We take it out of its Pashtut to explain that it refers to Nachala. Now Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, even if you perform Zibum, if there's a father there, the father takes precedence. Amar Ula, halocha ki Rabbi Yehuda. The halocha is like Rabbi Yehuda. V'chein amar Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, halocha ki Rabbi Yehuda. V'amar Ula, v'im teim Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, my time with the Rabbi Yehuda. So, we have either Rabbi Ula or Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, both of whom said that the halocha is like Rabbi Yehuda. One of them explained to us what's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda. So, my time with Rabbi Yehuda, dechtiv. It says, v'ya b'chor asher teleid. Ka b'chor. The same din as a b'chor. Ma b'chor ain lo b'chayav. Just like a Bechor has no inheritance as long as the father is alive, the Bechor's right to get double portion is only after his father passes away. While his father is alive, the Bechor has no more rights than any of the other children. Avainami and Lobechayav. So too, the Yabam over here, the Yabam is basically becoming a Bechor. Because the Yabam, in essence, is taking over his portion as well as his brother's portion. His portion is brother's portion in the Yerusha, in a sense, therefore he becomes like a Bechor who's taking a double portion. We also saw that earlier in the Masechta, just like by a Bechor, he only gets b'muchzak v'lo b'ra'ui, he only gets things that are available now, not things that come in the future. So to over here, this brother who performs Yibum, he gets the double portion of what's available now, not about Yerusha in the future. So he is functioning like a Bechor. Since he's functioning like a Bechor, the Bechor gets nothing while the father's alive, so too the Yabam will get nothing while the father's alive. Ima Bechor notel pishnaim nachar mitatav. Well, if you want to take this comparison all the way through, then what happens when the father passes away? The Bechor gets a double portion. Avai notel pishnaim nachar mitatav. Maybe, yes, he won't get the portion of his brother now. It'll be deferred until his father passes away. Once his father passes away, he will be in place of himself and his brother, and he'll take a double portion here. So where it says, Mide Yakum Hashem Aviv Ktiv, doesn't it say he'll step into his father's shoes? Yakum Hashem Achiv Ktiv. It says that he'll step into his brother's shoes. Velo Hashem Aviv, but not when it's coming from his father. Therefore, when it goes to his father already, it loses any connection to the brother, and now it's the father's possessions. In the father's possessions, he has no extra rights than any of the other brothers. The only time he has a right is in his brother's possessions, not in his father's possessions. Therefore, once it goes to the father, canceled. He gets no more rights. Some of the Rishonim say this is even true according to the Shitat Rabbanan. Here we're speaking in Shitat Rabbi Yehuda, and that the Bechor has no entitlement in the father's Yerusha that belonged to the brother. Whereas there are other Rishonim who believe that he does have such a right. Where it says, Amos, so let us say this way. Let's read the pasuk this way. Heicha deleka av, delishkol nachala, tikkayei mitzvat yibum. When there's no father present, meaning that the father has predeceased his children, then there's a possibility of him getting the nachalah of the deceased brother. In that case, he will have a mitzvah of yibum. Heicha de'ika av, in a case where the father's alive, and then there will not be any yakum hashem achiv, there'll be no nachalah, delo shakel nachalah, lo tikayim mitzvah yibum, there won't be any mitzvah of yibum. Let us assume that there's an association between nachalah and Yibum over here, because Yakum Hashem Achiv is the qualification, and the only time it's Yakum Hashem Achiv for the Nachalah is when the father's not present. So we'll say the mitzvah of Yibum only applies when the father's not present. Where it says something very interesting here. It says, Mide Yibum b'Nachalah tala Rachmana. Wait, the Torah doesn't connect Yibum to Nachalah. Yibum is not dependent on Nachalah. That's like the tail wagging the dog. That Nachalah is a result of performing Yibum. It's not the trigger for performing Yibum. Yivume Yimiabme. He does Yibum. Ve'ika Nachalah Shkule. Ve'ilo Lo Shakil. He performs Yibum. If there's Nachalah, he gets it. If there's no Nachalah, he doesn't get it. The mitzvah here is Yibum. The mitzvah is not Nachalah over here. If he performs Yibum and there's Nachalah, that's a side benefit of the Nachalah. If there's no Nachalah, either because his brother owned nothing, he was penniless, or because there's a father alive there, that doesn't affect the mitzvah of Yibum. Now, the question that's posed by the Gemara is very interesting. You can see here in the Mitzvah Tashas that he quotes you other places throughout the Masechta where we had this Yibum and Nachalah Tala Rachmana. But that Mitzvah Tashas is on that exact point, which is Yibum and Nachalah Tala Rachmana. The Gemara in other places in Shas makes it a statement. The Yibum and Nachalah Tala Rachmana. There, the Gemara says specifically, yes, Yibum is connected to Nachalah. You know where in context the Gemara says that? How do you know that the brothers have to be brothers through the father? The Gemara says, because Yibum is Tolu ben Nachalah. That's exactly why Yibum goes that way, because it's connected to Nachalah. So in the rest of Shas, the Gemara uses it as a statement. Over here, the Gemara uses it as a rhetorical question and says, well, Yibum ben Nachalah, Tolu Rachmana, uses it in a very different way than it uses every else in Shas. So you have to be mechalik over here in the nature here versus the nature in other places. The truth is that Yibum is Talui B'Nachalah when you're talking about the format of Yibum, like we're talking about brothers through the father, right? The procedural issues over here, then Yibum is Talui B'Nachalah. Nachalah has some impact on Yibum. On the other hand, to say that Nachalah drives the mitzvah of Yibum, that's we're not going to say. Nachalah is a byproduct of Yibum. Since it's a byproduct of Yibum, it tells us something about Yibum, but it's not going to drive Yibum. And you have to be mechalik in that way. And again, the way that I expressed before, I think it's the best. It's not going to be the tail wagging the dog, right? The dog here is the Yibum. The tail is the Nachalah. So yes, Nachalah will influence Yibum, but it will not direct the Yibum. And that's why the Gemara is posing it as a question over here versus a statement. I think the Tosfot Rosh and the Tosfot Yeshanim over here makes such a chiluk here because of the difference here between everywhere else we use it in Shas, the same statement. V'yartiv Chanina Kra, kamei de Rabbi Yanai. So Rabbi Chanina Kra was sitting before Rabbi Yanai. V'yotiv ka'amar, alocha ka Rabbi Yehuda. Says alocha is like Rabbi Yehuda, like we just saw from two other Amoraim, that alocha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei, pok kari kariyech lebara. Says, take your reading outside. It was a play on his name. Rabbi Chanina Kra probably was a teacher of the children or a teacher of Tanakh. So he says, take your reading and outside. And that's not correct. Ain't alocha like Rabbi Yehuda. The alocha is definitely not like Rabbi Yehuda. So Tana kamid Rav Nachman. We had another person who presented again, who's going through the Mishnayot in front of Rav Nachman. And he said again, ain't halacha like Rabbi Yehuda. Says the alocha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei, elokaman. So he says, who is the alocha like? Kerabonon? Pshita, yochid v'rabim, alocha k'rabim. What's the question here? It doesn't make any sense that you have to tell me ain alocha k'rab Yehuda. The only time you have to tell me ain alocha k'rab Yehuda if there was a hava mina that the alocha should be like Rabbi Yehuda. So in a case where with the Kvalei Apsak would have told us that the alocha is like Rabbi Yehuda and you come along and say ain alocha k'rab Yehuda, that's significant. But in a case where he's arguing on the Chachamim, why do you have to tell me ain alocha k'rab Yehuda? That's the natural Kvalei Apsak would have gone in this manner, which is the normative way or the normative Psak would have been halacha k'rabim. So don't tell me in halacha k'rab Yehuda. So Amalei asmei, should I erase it? Should I get rid of this Mishnah? Is this Mishnah completely unnecessary? Because over here, the Mishnah is pshita. We just saw that the Gemara said about all the lines of the Mishnah is pshita. And the only reason to bring the Mishnah down here is because Rabbi Yehuda, the question about the Av, the father, he's the only one who says something that is unusual here, that the father would inherit in the face of the Yabam. So he says, well, if the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, and you're saying to me it doesn't matter because the Chachamim are majority opinion, then maybe I should just get rid of this Mishnah. I'm like, lo, at halacha atnich, you learned this halacha, umukshahu the akshilach, somebody asked you a question or there was a problem with it, vafacht, and then you flipped it. Udumayda afacht, shapir afacht, and the way that you flipped it is correct. So what he was suggesting was, at first you had a Mesorah or learning that halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda. Then the question came up and was, how could it be that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? How are you leaving the Rabbonon and doing like Rabbi Yehuda? So then you flipped it and said, ain halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda, instead of saying halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda. Now, the way that you flipped it, that is correct, because you did the right thing. You were right. You can't have halacha Rabbi Yehuda in the face of Rabbim. The halacha is like the Chachamim here, not like Rabbi Yehuda. So you had a Mesora that had said something about Rabbi Yehuda, and then it comes along and says, Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Because that Mesora that you had is incorrect, because he was going up against the Rabbim, and it should be Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. But the way that you flipped it now is correct. If Nachman's bothered by the fact that it was phrased as Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, it should have been phrased as halacha k'Chachamim. So he says, don't erase it here because it came through a mistake. Somebody taught you halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda mistakenly, and you flipped it to Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, but that doesn't diminish from the fact that the Braita is a correct Braita, and therefore leave the Braita intact, and you can say Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, even though really it just should say halacha k'Chachamim. The fact that you had a Mesora originally that dealt with Rabbi Yehuda means that it was important. There was some Havamina here that maybe the halacha would have been like Rabbi Yehuda, and now you corrected it and said, right, Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, and that's the right way to read it. But the fact that there was a Mesora about something about Rabbi Yehuda means that this Mishnah is important to be taught, because we had some feeling that Rabbi Yehuda was important in this situation, and we saw that Amoraim, a couple of them, paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, or had a Mesora that the halacha was like Rabbi Yehuda, but in the end, we switch it around and say, Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, now the Mishnah says, Hacholetz livimto. Someone who forms chalitza with his yivama, hu asur b'krovotah, v'hi asura b'krovav. He is restricted in her relatives, and she is restricted in his relatives. This is all midirabanan. Midoraita, chalutza, or chalitza has no impact in terms of marriage. Alright, so our Mishnah is premised on the fact that it looks like a married woman, even the chalitza, even though when the chalitza is performed, he's no longer his wife, but it looks like he was married to her. And because of that, we make all these arayot asurot as if he had been married to this woman, or as if he is married to this woman. Now that's from the Yabam's perspective. From the Yavama's perspective, the Gemara makes it like a grusha, like a divorcee. In the case of a divorcee, then all the arayot that were asurot while he's married remain after the divorce. The divorce doesn't dissolve the arayot just because he divorced the woman. So filter over here, chalitza does not dissolve it. Hu asur b'ima, ube'em ima, ube'em avia, ube'bita, ube'bat bita, ube'bat bina, ube'achatua. So he is asur in her mother, her maternal grandmother, her paternal grandmother, her daughter, her granddaughter through a daughter, and her granddaughter through her son, ube'achuta, and her sister, b'zman shi kayemet. As long as the chalutza is kayemet, then he's asur in his sister, similar to grusha, where achot isha is a problem of arayot as long as the sister is alive. You can't marry two sisters when they're alive, even after divorce. If the sister who he was originally married to passed away, then he is permitted to marry the other sister. So to here with chalutza. As long as the woman who performed chalitza is still alive, he can't marry the sister. If she passes away, then he can marry the sister. Ve'achin mutarin. The brothers are not affected by that. I mean that the brothers who did not perform chalitza, they're not affected by any of these restrictions in her relatives. Ve'i asura, and she is restricted. Be'aviv, his father. Be'aviv, his grandfather on the paternal side. Obe beno, and with his son. Oben beno, his grandson through his son. Be'achiv, and his brothers. Obe ben achiv, and his nephews. So now the Mishnah makes a statement, something that we saw back earlier in the Gemara. Mutar adam bikrovat tzarat chalutzato. A person is permitted to marry krovat tzarat chalutzato. Marry the relative of the co-wife of the one he performed chalitza with. Vasur bitzarat krovat chalutzato. And he's asur with the co-wife of the relative that he performed chalitza with. So again, this is a case where you have Rashi gives example, Ruvain chatlatz de Leah. Ruvain performed chalitza with Leah, v'Rachel nisuah l'Nachri. Rachel, her sister, is married to a third party, v'la tzara, and Rachel has a co-wife, omet l'Nachri, and then this third party passes away, asura tzara l'Ruvain. Rachel is obviously asura to him because she is achot ishto or achot chalutzato at this point, so she's definitely asura. But not only is Rachel asura, so is her co-wife asura because she is tzarat krovat chalutzato. So his chalutza here is Leah. His sister, which is the krova, is Rachel. And Rachel's co-wife is the tzara. So the tzarat, krovat chalutzato, is restricted. On the other hand, if Leah has a co-wife over here, and he performs chalitza with Leah, then he's obviously restricted in the krovot, in the relatives of Leah, but Leah's co-wife, her relatives are not restricted to him, because those are krovat sarat chalutzato. Those are the relatives of the co-wife of the one he performed chalitza with. So again, easy scenario is, Reuven is married to Leah and Chana, and Kalev is married to Rachel and Tzipora. So then Reuven passes away, and Shimon, his brother, is here. He performs chalitza with Leah. So in terms of performing chalitza with Leah, he has all the restrictions of the krovot in our Mishnah. But with regards to Chana, the co-wife, he has no restrictions. I mean, he has a restriction with her because she was a co-wife, but after that, her relatives are totally fine for him. On the other hand, Rachel, who is Leah's sister, after Kalev passes away, obviously he can't marry Rachel because Leah, his sister, he performed chalitza with. Now, if Leah passes away, he could marry Rachel at that point. But also, Rachel's co-wife, Tzipora, will be restricted to him because she is Tzerat Krovat Chalutzato. Again, the Gemara will explain why this distinction exists. Just to note, many of the Rishonim disagree with this description that I gave you that's found in Rashi, because now it turns out that a Chalutza turns out to be more Chamura than a regular marriage. Because in a regular marriage, co-wives are not restricted if they're not in the context of Yibum. Co-wives to a relative are mutarot. And now here all of a sudden, co-wives to relatives become problematic because of chalitza. And therefore they don't like Rashi's explanation here of tzarat, krovat, chalutzato. And they explain it similar to what's going to actually happen in the upcoming Mishnah on Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. I'm going to defer it till there because it will complicate the matters for today's daf. But just know that many of the Mishnahim believe that this only happens where they fall to him to Yibum. That it's only a case of Tzarat Krovat Chalutzato is only an issue where that Krova also falls to Yibum, and therefore it's all within the context of Yibum. Okay, now the Gemara says, Ibailu, Gazru Shniot B'Chalutza Olo. Were the Rabbanan Gozer Shniot Arayot by a Chalutza, or were they not Gozer by a Chalutza? So let's think about this. Shniot Arayot are only Asurot Midirabanan. The Krovot of the Chalutza are also only Asur Midirabanan. Why are they asur? Because of a case of grusha where they are asurot mide oraita. So the question at hand is, when they made it asur for the krovot, did they also put on the shniot d'arayot? Is that becoming zera l'gzera? Because the whole point of shniot d'arayot is to build on top of the isurim d'arayta. So when you have isurim d'arayta, we put the shniot d'arayot around it. Here, we only have Yisurim Derabanan. Maybe the Shniot Derayot don't apply. Or maybe it's all part of Gzeira. Shniot Derayot apply. Anytime there's Nisar Derayot, it also applies to Shniot Derayot. And that's what the Gemara wants to know. The Shniot Derayot, B'chalutza, do they apply or not? Be'er Ervado Raita Gazrubahu Rabbonon. Shniot, when you were talking about Arayot Deoraita, relatives Deoraita when he's married to the woman, in that case, Rabbanan goes there, the Shniot. Bechalutza lo gozru b'rabanan shniot. Bechalutza was only the rabbanan. Maybe the rabbanan were not gozer shniot. Or dilma loshna. Or maybe it makes no difference. All right. So our Mishnah is premised on the fact that it looks like a married woman, even the chalitza, even though when the chalitza is performed, he's no longer his wife, but it looks like he was married to her. And because of that, we make all these arayot asurot as if he had been married to this woman, or as if he is married to this woman. So Gemara says, Tashma, hu asur bi'ima. He is restricted in her mother and in her maternal grandmother. Vilu aim ima, her maternal great grandmother, Lotani. That's not written here, and that's one of the Shniot Arayot. So you see in the Mishnah only includes mother and grandmother, which are Asurot Midoraita. It does not include the case which is Shniot Arayot, which is the great grandmother. Where it says, Dino Mahainu Taima. Tolotani. Maybe the reason it did that is Mishum to kabai the mitnes seifa. Because in the seifa it says, v'achim mutarim. That the brothers are mutarim. Vitana aim ima. If we mention the Mishnah that the great grandmother is asura, hava mina achim mutarim, dafka be'aim ima. I would have thought that the brothers only mutarim, the brothers who did not perform chalitza over here, but were available to perform yibom, and he represented them in form chalitza. So we would have thought, okay, he is asur not only in the arayot deoraita, but also in shniyot arayot, including great grandmother. Then when we come and say the achim are not restricted, we would have said, no, the achim are restricted in the same ones deoraita. They're just not restricted in the one that is added midirabanan. Aval be'im ima ube'ima lo. But in the case where the grandmother or the mother, maybe the brothers are restricted. So because when we say achim mutarim, we don't know what it's going to reference. If you added in that case of great grandmother, we would have thought that's all it's referencing. But it says v'litnei eim ima v'litnei achim mutarim bikulan. Just add in the word bikulan, and you won't have that problem. Our problem is when we say the achim mutarim, we don't know what it references in the Mishnah. So we would have assumed it only references the shniyot darayot. And not the other things, when the Mishnah really intended for it to reference everything. Why says it's an easy solution. Just write, V'chayim mutarim bikulan. Kulan means all of them. So then you wouldn't have that problem. The Gemara says, Kasha. That is really a good question. We don't really have an answer for that question. Now, Tashma, the Gemara is going to go through different sections of the Mishnah and try to prove that we have a problem of shniyot arayot. It says, He asura be'aviv, u'be'avi aviv. She is restricted with his father and his grandfather. Tani miha avi aviv. Starting about his grandfather, paternal grandfather. My laf, what's the problem here? Mishum choletz, the one who performed chalitza over here. Dehavi ala kalat bino. Because then it will be the daughter-in-law of his son. And when we say that asur be aviv and avi aviv, what we're going to say here is that the reason that they are restricted from marrying her is because the grandfather, when he's looking down the line, the grandfather has a son, and his son has a son, which is the grandson. The grandson is the choletz over here. So then, the grandson's wife, quote-unquote, was this woman that he was performing chalitza with, which is otherwise known as kalat bino, which is the daughter-in-law of his son. From the grandfather's perspective, the woman that you're performing chalitza with is his son's daughter-in-law. So that's what the restriction is. So now, kalat bino is a restriction of shniyot le'arayot. So if that's the case, then we have proof that there are shniyot le'arayot by chalitza. Gemara says, lo, mishum mitna, davila, kalat bino. Wait a minute here. There are two parties that are involved with this woman over here. The two parties involved with this woman over here are the deceased brother, and the one is performing chalitza. From the grandfather's perspective, and from the father's perspective, this girl, this woman, has two problems. This woman has a problem because she was married to one of his sons. And we have a second problem is that one of his sons performed chalitza with her. So we originally thought that here we're discussing the reason that woman is a problem here is because she is the kalat bino vis-a-vis the person who performed chalitza. And that's why there's a problem. That's a shniyot le'arayot. But the Gemara says, no, 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 you're mistaken. She's a problem because she was married to his brother. She's also his son's daughter-in-law because she was married to his brother. And that's an isur because of shniyot le'arayot, you're right. But it's coming through an isur d'oraita where he was married to her. So since it's coming through an isur d'oraita, there we're certain we have shniyot le'arayot, and there's no question. And we have to keep this in mind in all these situations that the Gemara is going to use this answer over and over again is there are two parties that this woman has issues with the relatives with. One is that she was married to this brother. Number two is that she formed chalitza with one of the brothers. So in this case, from the grandfather's perspective, looking down at his son has a daughter-in-law. He has a daughter-in-law two ways. He has a daughter-in-law because she married, like, Reuven, his son. She's also a daughter-in-law because Shimon performed chalitza with her. So originally we thought it had to do with Shimon. That's why she was restricted. And then it would be shniyah v'arayot v'makom chalitza. I says, no, it's because Reuven was married to her and she's a granddaughter-in-law that way. And this answer of the Gemara is not so far-fetched because the Mishnah does mention Aviv, his father. Now his father is a common father to him, the one who's performing chalitza, as well as to the deceased brother. And she's restricted because it was his father-in-law from the deceased brother, not because father-in-law from the chalitza. So you see that the Mishnah does mention individuals who are even asurim, irrespective of the chalitza over here. And so that's what the Gemara is saying over here, that there are certain issues here that are because of the choletz. There are certain issues because of the deceased brother. And the Mishnah is mentioning them despite the fact that the Isur derives from the deceased brother and not from the one who was choletz. Now the Gemara says, Tashma, ubeben beno. She is restricted in his grandson. My love, Mishum Chalitz. Again, this is because of the problem of Chalitza. Tahavila Eshet Avi Aviv. It's the wife of his grandfather. Now, the wife of his grandfather, again, is Shniot Le'arayot. So again, vis-a-vis the person who is performing Chalitza, Shimon over here, if Shimon has a grandson, and now the grandson wants to marry this woman, he may not do that because she was the wife of his grandfather. Now, what does that mean? She was the wife of his grandfather. He performed Chalitza with her, but we're treating it as if he was a wife. And so there's a problem. That's a Shniot Le'arayot, and it's because of the Chalitza. Where it says, lo, mishum mitna. Oh, the problem is because of the deceased brother. Because it's the wife of his grandfather's brother. Which is again, a shniot l'arayot. But that's fine because, in this case, it's being triggered by the one who was really married to this woman. Reuven was married to this woman. Independent of chalitza. Say Reuven was married to this woman and there was no need for chalitza over here. His grandnephew would still be restricted in this woman because of Shniot Arayot. Shimon's grandson would not be able to marry Reuven's wife, not because of Shimon, but because of Reuven being married to her. Reuven being married to her makes her the wife of the grandfather's brother. That's a Shniot Arayot, that is Asura. And it's Asura because we're dealing with Arayot Oraita, because there he was married, Reuven was married to her. So originally he thought it was coming through Shimon himself. And because she was the wife of the grandfather, which is a Shniot Arayot, and that's triggered by the Chalitza. His grandfather Shimon formed Chalitza with this woman. It becomes like Eshet, his grandfather. And that's a Shniot Arayot. That would approve there are Shniot Arayot. The Gemara says, no, the problem here has to do with the original marriage to Reuven, and it's his great uncle's wife. His great uncle's wife is also restricted in Midr Rabbanan. The Gemara says, ha, Meimar Machshir. Wait a minute. A Meimar says, in the case of Eshet Achi Avi Aviv, that is Mutar. And that means that there are no Shniot Arayot there. Now we're in a problem. Because when you do it derech the way of Chalitza, then you come up with a Shniot Arayot, which is that it's his grandfather's wife. That is a Shniot Arayot. But now, if you say that it's his great uncle's wife, a Meimar says great uncle's wife is not one of the Shniot Arayot, it's Mutar. So Meimar Mukila Bibar Bara de Saba. So Meimar does a little bit of acrobatics with the Mishnah and says that the Gezer is the grandson of the grandfather. Okay. Doesn't that make him his brother? Basically, if you say it's the grandson of the grandfather, isn't that Achiv or Ben Achiv? Doesn't that make him his brother and his nephew? Because if you're looking at it from the grandfather's perspective, meaning from Yaakov's perspective, the Bra and the Bar Bara are his son and grandson. From the Chalutz's perspective are his brother and his nephew. So it says, Tana Achiv Ben Av, Tani Achiv Ben Ein, Ein Ochanami. We're talking about different types of brothers. There's a brother through a common mother, and there's a brother through a common father. So when you mention Achiv in the Mishnah, that was only talking about Achiv through the mother. Now here, when it mentions Achiv here, it means Achiv through the father. And so therefore we're mentioning both forms of Ach over here, and that's why it's mentioned this way. So a Meimar solves the problem by saying that when the Mishnah meant over here, it says, Beno and Ben Beno, it's talking about from the Yaakov's perspective, the father of the deceased brother and the Miyabim over here. From his perspective, his Ben, his son, as well as his grandson are restricted over here. Well, his son is a brother to Shimon Reuven and Ochanami. That's Achiv Min Ha'av. The Achiv that was mentioned in the Mishnah is Achiv Min Ha'im. And also his nephew. Yes, and Ochanami, his nephew is problematic in this case. Okay, Tashma. Now the Gemara says, let's do it this way. The Tani Rabbi Chiya. Arba midivrei Torah, v'arba midivrei sofrim. There are four that are restricted from the Torah, and four that are restricted midirabanan. Av, ubno, achiv, uben achiv midivrei Torah. Father, son, brother, and nephew, those are midivrei Torah. This is talking about a case of chalutza. Avi aviv, grandfather, v'avi imo, grandfather on the maternal side. Ben Beno, his grandson through his son, or Ben Bito, and his grandson through his daughter, those are Midivrei Sofrim. Tani Miho, in this list of Rabbi Chiya, Avi Aviv, he's talking about his grandfather. What's the problem of Avi Aviv? Everybody agrees that Avi Aviv is only a problem here, Midir Rabbanan. It's only a Shniot Arayot. So why is it a Shniot Arayot over here? If you say it's because it's in reference to the Choletz, Vavila Kalatz Bino, And the restriction here is because it's his son's daughter-in-law, similar to what we saw before. So then it would be a case, because of the chalitza, we're saying that there are shniot midrabanan. Lo, mishom mitna, tave le kalat bino. Because of the deceased brother, again, it's still kalat bino. From the grandfather's perspective, both Reuven and Shimon are his grandchildren. And therefore, they are the daughters-in-law of his son. Well, or daughters-in-law of his son, Reuven, who actually had a marriage. And a daughter-in-law is from Shimon, who had chalitza with her. So we'll just look at it from Reuven's perspective rather than Shimon's perspective. So again, that doesn't prove anything. Even though Rabbi Chi over here says there's a restriction, midivrei Torah, and a restriction, midivrei Sofrim, the divrei Torah we understand. The divrei Sofrim, we have to understand why. So the Gemara originally thinks the divrei Sofrim are shniot derabanan because of the chalitza, and therefore we would have proof to our position. The Gemara says no. The reason they're asurot is because of the deceased brother. And that's why it causes a problem over here. Even though it's shniot arayot vis-a-vis the deceased brother. Where it says, tashma, avi imo. Case where it says, grandfather through his maternal side. Maila mishum cholet. What's the problem here? It's cholet seitz. Davilei kalat bito. Because that makes it into his daughter's daughter-in-law. Which is again, and only a problem of shniot arayot. Lo mishum mitna. Davilei kalat bito. Again, no, it's because of the deceased. Over here, you have to say that they share a common father and mother. This is a case where Reuven and Shimon share both a common mother and father. Otherwise, this would not be true. The only way you can say that Reuven married a woman and then passed away, and then Shimon performs chalitza with her, that same woman is only classified as kalat bito, the daughter-in-law of his daughter, if they share a common mother. So over here, they have to share both a common father in order for there to be yibum, and a common mother in order for this to be true. But given that fact, the problem here of the kalat bito is not because of the one who performed chalitza, it's because of the one who married her. And so again, we said, oh, we thought we found again shniot arayot for chalitza. Again, we say, no, it's related to the deceased brother, not to the brother who performed chalitza. Tashma uben bino. Case of a grandson. Maila mishum choletz. It's a problem of the choletz, which is davilei eshet avi aviv. It's his grandfather's wife. And that is a shniot arayot. The Gemara says, lo, mishum mitno. It's because of the deceased brother. Davilei eshet achei avi aviv. It's his great uncle's wife. Again, which is also midrabanan and shniot arayot. But in reference to the deceased brother, we don't have any problem with that. Because with the deceased brother, he's d'oraita. And therefore, having shniot arayot is totally fine. So that's where the restriction's coming up. Va meimar machshir be'eshet achei avi aviv. Wait a minute. A meimar says that's totally fine. Great uncle's wife is not a problem. A meimar mukim la mishum choletz. You're right. A meimar over here has to say it's because of the choletz. He can't answer like we did in the Mishnah, because over here, Rabbi Chia makes it clear that this is an isur derabanan and not in those isurim that are de'oraita. I mean that achiv over here is not achiv like the way he answered before, where he made it, it was in reference to the grandfather, it's the grandfather's son and grandson, which made it his brother and nephew. That you can't say because he explicitly already mentioned brother and nephew in those that are d'oraita. So over here, you must be that we're talking about shniot d'arayot. And since a meimar can't come up with the shniot d'arayot through the deceased brother, only through the chalitza, what a meimar will have to say is, mishum choletz, kasever gazur shniot b'chalitza. Or at least we come to a conclusion, through a meimar's position, he must say that we are gozer shniot d'arayot through a chalitza. But what about others? Aside from those who think that a great uncle's wife is a problem of shniot arayot, what do we say about our mishmah? Tashma, uben bito, a grandson through his daughter. My law mishum choletz. Again, here the problem is because of the choletz. Davila eshet avi imo, because it's the wife of his maternal grandfather. Lo mishum mitna, davila eshet achi avi imo, because it is the wife of his maternal great uncle. Right? So that again would be Nisir Midrabanan. Vaha Gabi Shniot de Erva Lo Gazru. If you remember earlier in the Masechta, we discussed about certain Arayot that they were Gozer, certain they weren't Gozer. And over there we said by Shniot of Erva, there is no maternal great uncle. The maternal great uncle's wife is not restricted in Shniot Arayot. It's only the paternal great uncle where we say that. Ella, la mishum choletz, it must be because of chalitza, u'shmamina, gazru shniot b'chalutza, shmamina. From here, it's pretty clear, ben bito, gives up the ghost, meaning that Ben Bitol tells us for sure there are Shniyot Arayot, because the only way to get to that is through the Chalitza with the brother. Because if you go to the Mitnah, if you go to the deceased brother over here, it's not going to help you, because for, in a real scenario, that's not classified as Shniyot Arayot. A great uncle through the maternal side is not considered to be Shniyot Arayot. I mean, the wife of a great uncle through the maternal side is not considered to be Shniyot Arayot, and therefore now the only way to get to this is through the Chalitza, and that shows you we do have Shniyot Arayot. Now, the question is, why didn't the Mishnah mention them? The Mishnah is enumerating all of these items. So the Tosafot answers and says, V'halo tani matnitin avi'imo ben bito, how come it doesn't mention all these different Shniyot Arayot? It's Mishum Tatana Vashir. It gave you one example of Shniyot Arayot, and then you can extrapolate from that. Once you know that there's one of them, then you can extrapolate that there are others. Miu Rabbi Chia, Diktoni Minyona Akasha. For Rabbi Chiyu enumerates, it says there are 8. 4 midivrei Torah, 4 midivrei Sofrim. Why does he limit those numbers? Why does he just say Shniyot Arayot? He's not saying Tana Vishir. He's giving you a specific number. There it's much more problematic. To Lotana ben Achuto ben Achiv Minaim. Veshema Lotana ela Arba keneged Arba shel divrei Torah. Just said that he made it, it's a structurally, he just put 4 and 4. Again, I'm going to tell you that this has a lot to do with memorization. That it makes a lot of sense when you are memorizing Torah Shebaal Peh, types of setups like this. When you have a Braita Reb Chia that says 4 Doraita, 4 Derabanan, it makes it easier to remember 4 and 4. If you try telling me there are 4 Doraita, and then there are all these Shniel Darayot, it makes it harder to remember. If you do 4 and 4, then you can, okay, Shniel Darayot, yeah, I see it's here, and then we include all of them. So even though he gave you a number, the number Tosaf is saying is only a memory aid, it's not coming to be the exclusion of other Shniot Darayot. Now we go on with the Mishnah. Mutar Adam, Amar Abtuvi Bar Kisna Amar Shmuel, Halba Al Tzarat Chalutza Havlad Mamzer. One who goes ahead marries one of the co-wives of the Chalutza, the child born of that is a Mamzer. My Taima Beisuro Kaima, because she maintains her original Isur. So in a case here, Reuven passes away, and Reuven had multiple wives. Shimon comes along and performs Chalutza with one of the women. The remaining co-wives now remain as restricted of Eshet Ach. The woman that he performed Chalitza with, she is released, but, and also her Isur is downgraded. Because now the only Isur he has is, Kevin Shelo Bana, Shuv Lo Ibaneh. So that's an Isur Lav that he has with the Chalitza herself. But with regards to the other co-wives, they are all restricted by Isur Ervav Eshet Ach, because they never were released from that situation. So that's the statement that Rav Tuvi Bar Kisna says here, that a person who engages with the co-wives has a problem of erva do right of karet, and therefore he results in a mamzer. So Amar Rav Yosef, afana nami tanina. We also have it from our Mishnah. Mutar adam bikovat sarat chalutzato. Person is mutar with the relatives of the co-wife to his chalutza. So iamar bishlama tzara avrai mishum hachi mutar ba'achuta. If you say that the tzara is an outsider here, that's why you are mutar with her sister. If you say that the co-wife is exactly like the one that you perform chalitza with, am I mutar? Why should it be mutar? Let's think about this. If when he performs chalitza with one of Reuven's wives, that impacts all of the co-wives, then it's equivalent of him performing chalitza with all the co-wives. So then why is the co-wife's sister mutar to you? That's the sister of your chalutza, in a sense. So it should not be mutar. The fact that we say that the co-wife's sister is mutar shows you that the co-wife is not affected by the chalutza. Only the woman who you perform chalutza is affected, and her krovot, her relatives are affected. But the tzara, she has no relationship to this chalutza. Therefore, her sister is fine over here. So when it says, let me tell you to yufta the Rabbi Yochanan, let us say this is a strong refutation of the position of Rabbi Yochanan. To remember, Damar ben hu ben achin, en chayvim lo ala chalutza karet, lo ala tzarata karet. If you remember, we had a machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish earlier in the Masechta, where Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish argue about the performance of chalitza and yibum over here. Whether when one performs chalitza, one of the brothers, is he a representative of all the brothers? And he's acting on behalf of everybody? Or is he only acting on behalf of himself? And same thing with the wives. When the woman who the chalitza is performed with, the yibum is performed with, is she acting on behalf of all the co-wives, or is she acting on behalf of herself? Rabbi Yochanan says that when the brother performs chalitza, he does it on behalf of all the other brothers, And when this woman accepts, or the chalitza is performed with her, she is on behalf of all the other co-wives. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, if one of the brothers sleeps with one of the co-wives, there's only an Isur Lav, there is no Isur Karet. They're all subject to the same din of Kevin Shalom Bana, Shublo Yibaneh. The Chiyuv Karet of Eshrach falls away for everybody here. Not just the two individuals who perform the chalitza, for all the brothers and all the co-wives. They say this is a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. Because now, not only do we have Rav Tuvi Bar Kisna saying this, but Rav Yosef is saying our Mishnah is meduyeket, that that's the din. And that's against Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, Rav Tuvi Bar Kisna is basically saying what Reish Lakish says over there, which is that the two parties involved, they are released from Eshadach, and they have an Isra of Shkevin Shalom Bana Shuvlo Yibaneh. But the other brothers and the other co-wives remain in their status of Eshadach, and therefore there's a Chiyuv Karet associated with them. So it's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. So I'm the Rabbi Yochanan, v'tizbara? Achot chalutza deoraita? He says, what type of question are you asking on me? The sister of a chalutza, is that a din deoraita? The fact that you're restricted in the chalutza's sister is only a din derabonan to start with. So then, if that's only a din derabonan, now you're going to come and ask me why the co-wife's sister is mutar? Because that's like a double problem derabonan. I think all the co-wives are mutarot. And why is the sister released? Because it's already far-fetched that we're making the relatives of the woman who performed the chalitza asurot. They're only derabanan. Now you want to go add on the co-wives, relatives? That's way too far-fetched. So he's just saying that it's a din derabanan, and the din derabanan doesn't extend out there. Even though I believe that the co-wife and the chalitza are in the same status. They both are now had as if the chalitza was performed with them. But mi derabanan, we're only going to deal with the woman who the chalitza was actually performed with. The co-wife, there's no reason to deal with her on a derabanan level. Where it says, "Rama Reish Lakish, Kanshan Rabbi Achot Grusha Midivrei Torah, Achot Chalutza Midivrei Sofrim." So, doesn't Reish Lakish say over here, Rabbi learnt, Achot Grusha is Midivrei Torah, Achot Chalutza is Midivrei Sofrim? So we have proof to Rabbi Yochanan's statement over here that the whole restriction here is a restriction derabanan, not a restriction deoraita, because you saw in the Mishnah that the Achot is restricted as long as she's alive, because by Achot Grusha, that's the same restriction midoraita. By achot chalutza, that's the restriction derabanan. But there's a parallel here between the grusha deoraita and the chalutza was derabanan. And Rabbi Yochanan is saying, even Reish Lakish says that over here we're talking about a case of derabanan. There's a difference between deoraita and derabanan. So also I'm going to say the same thing. There's a difference between deoraita and derabanan. And over here we're dealing with the derabanan. It doesn't extend to the co-wives, even though the co-wives have the same din as the chalutza. Okay, now the Gemara says, Maishna. Mishnah is on these last two lines of the Mishnah, which is, why are you mutar to marry the sister of the co-wife that you, of the woman you form chalitza with, but you're not allowed to marry the co-wife of the sister of the one that you performed chalitza with? Again, to make the case easy, you have Reuven and Kalev. Reuven is married to two women, Leah and Chana. Kalev is married to two women, Rachel and Tzipporah. So then, Reuven passes away, and Levi, their third brother, comes and performs chalitza with Leah. When he forms chalitza with Leah, Chana, the co-wife, her sisters are mutar now to Levi. Levi has no impact. He formed chalitza with Leah. Even though Leah's sisters are restricted, Chana, the co-wife's sisters, are not restricted. That's krovat, tzarat, chalutzato. On the other hand, Rachel, who is Leah's sister, because Kalev passes away, Rachel is restricted because that's the sister of his chalutza. But not only is the sister restricted, Tzipora is also restricted because she is the co-wife of the sister of the chalutza. So over here, Tzipora is asurat to Levi, but Chana's sister is not restricted him. What's the difference? Maishnahai or Maishnahai? What's the difference in these cases? Hach dazla ba'adol lebeidina gazru barabonon. The one who accompanies her to the Beit Din, there the Rabbanon goes there. Hi, the lo azlaba dal the Beit Din, lo gazru Rabbanon. The one that doesn't accompany her to the Beit Din, there's no gzeirah. Leah is going to the Beit Din to have chalitza perform with her. Who's going to come with her to keep her company? Her sister. Her sister's going to come with her. Rachel is going to accompany her. So now people, when they go to the Beit Din, people are not going to know who the chalitza was performed. Was it performed with Leah or Rachel? They're not clear about that. So therefore, the Sarah, the co-wife of Rachel, will also be restricted because otherwise my people might come to think you performed chalitza with Rachel and then he marries the co-wife. So you can perform chalitza with one and then Yibum with the other. That's what people will think. So therefore, Rachel's co-wife is a surah, even though she has nothing to do with anything over here. She'll be restricted because of that. On the other hand, Chana, the co-wife of Leah, doesn't show up in Beit Din. When they're performing Chalitza with Leah, the co-wife doesn't come to accompany her to Beit Din. She's not in Beit Din. So nobody thinks the co-wife was involved at all. Therefore, her sister, her relatives, are all mutarot, because nobody saw her in Beit Din. Nobody saw Chalitza being performed with her. So it all has to do with appearances here. It's about who's going to be in Beit Din, and the mistake that people will make when they see them in Beit Din. If we can mistake that the Chalitza was performed with you, then your co-wives are going to be restricted. On the other hand, if we can't make a mistake about you, your relatives will be mutarot. So that's the case. Leah's co-wife will not show up in Beit Din, therefore her relatives are mutarot. Her sister will show up in Beit Din, her co-wife will become problematic because she's in Beit Din with her. Okay, we're going to stop here on the Mishnah on the top of Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph.